Hello, and welcome to 15 Minute History. This season, John and I are going to bring you the stories of heroes in history and the lessons they teach us today. If this is your first time here, we're glad to have you. Stay connected with us at our website, 15minutehistorypodcast.org, where you can find transcripts, older episodes, and our contact form, or on Facebook and Instagram. Now, let's start the show.
Welcome to part two of our hero interviews. Let's get started.
Hello, my name is Bethany. I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for 15 years. I just had my 15-year anniversary this past month in June. I am a resource ICU nurse, and I travel to various locations, and I work in the ICU up in Anderson, Indiana, Carmel, Indiana, Indianapolis, Indiana. So I see many different settings on a daily basis.
Would you mind walking our audience through a typical day when you show up for work to the time that you leave?
Well, I work 2 days a week, and I work 12-hour shifts. So yes, they are long days, but they tend to go rather quickly because especially in the ICU, they're pretty busy from start to finish. So basically, I walk in at 7 a.m. and we get a big group report where we get our individual assignments, and then we get a general picture of how the unit is looking for the day. After that, we meet with the night shift nurse from the shift before. They give us a full rundown of everything we need to know with each of our patients. So that includes how they're doing physically with their assessment and then their lab values, different medications they're on, different issues they're having, if there's any social issues going on, like stuff with family or just general status. So that takes about 10 to 15 minutes to get report on two patients, sometimes longer. You get your day started by looking at all the information on the computer. In our unit, we do every 4 hours, you do a full body assessment on your patient. You're checking them head to toe. There's many different things you're checking, but you do that every 4 hours, and then you're charting that whole assessment every 4 hours. Typically in the morning, they have a whole list of medications that you give. Typically around 9 o'clock is when most of those are due, but then they're also due throughout the day. Oftentimes there's labs. You're drawing blood throughout the day if the doctor needs certain things that you're monitoring. A lot of it is cleanup of your patient, especially in the ICU. You're keeping them clean. They're not able to oftentimes take care of themselves like they usually can or get up out of bed and walk around. So you're keeping them turned in the bed every couple hours. You're cleaning their mouths. You're cleaning up any bowel movements that they might have. You're making sure that everything is contained. All the bodily fluids are where they should be. I think our jobs would be a lot easier if we didn't have so much charting to do. But the reason that's so important is for two reasons. It helps tell the story of the patient in the hospital. So if anyone needs to know what happened on a certain day, they can see exactly what happened, you know, almost to the minute in the ICU. But also legally, if there's any issues where you're going to court or something and it's 5 years down the road, you can look back at your charting and say, oh, this is what I did. This is, you know, set in stone because I charted it. So you can't argue with that. So that's a very rough picture, but there's just a lot of factors that go into each day. And some days are a little more complicated than others, but like I said, they go pretty quickly.
Thinking through your day, how do you classify a hard day? At the end of the day, you get home or on your drive even, what do you define as a hard day in your work?
It's interesting because you can have a really good day, even if your patient is coding, even if your patient is pooping every hour or so and you're cleaning it up, you can still have a really good day. And I would say the big factors are what kind of team are you working with that day and how much support do you have? When I was a brand new nurse, I used to think that it would just be me taking care of my patient. And I was just the one in charge of everything. Obviously the doctor as well, but the doctor isn't at the bedside. But I quickly learned working in the ICU that your team is just the most crucial factor of how your day is going to go. And if you have people who are willing to jump in and help you, if you're in a code situation where someone needs CPR, they need to be resuscitated. If you have a good doctor who's there and the nurses who are surrounding you, even though it's chaotic, sometimes you just feel like, okay, we've got this. Like, I am not on an island. I can get through this. And you all kind of just jump in together. And I give a lot of credit to my teammates in the ICU because it's a very teamwork-based area to be, and we all want to help each other get through these situations. So one of my friends calls it the dance, when you have a doctor you know really well and several of your teammates around, and you're able to just, you know, you can read each other really well. You've worked together for a long time. You know kind of how everybody functions. Even in really hard situations, it can go really smoothly. So when there's a lack of that there, sometimes the communication can be really rough. Sometimes you're like looking out the door, just like, where are my helpers? I need help, because you can't do all that's required of this job by yourself. I would say a hard day is when I just feel like I've been kind of on my own little island. And like I said, I do rotate around. So there are some units where I don't know people as well. And maybe the teamwork isn't as stellar as it is in other places. I've had days where I've been extremely frustrated by the end because there was just a lot thrown at me all at once. And I felt like I had to really beg for help. And that's not a great feeling. And then sometimes things can be very hard to stomach. I work in the trauma neuro ICU a lot of times, and I used to work there as staff. So every day I was there, you know, there's a lot of young people getting into accidents. There's a lot of really sad things with strokes and people with brain tumors, and just, it's really eye-opening. I'd say, especially in the trauma unit, you see a lot of young people that can just be very emotional. So by the end of the day, that doesn't always mean it's a bad day, but it can just be a lot more emotionally taxing when you're seeing things like that.
Many of the individuals that we've spoken with so far have alluded to or directly addressed the detachment that has to be present in order for you to do your job. The percentage I've heard is about 10% of the time it's impossible to be detached. So think of a police officer who sees a child drowning or somebody's trapped inside a car. You can't be detached anymore. You have to be all in. I have to help this person. What is that 10% for you?
I think because I'm a mom, when it's a child, whether it's a young child or maybe a teenager, because we get as young as 15 in the trauma neuro ICU. So if there's a teenager and parents and, you know, they're in just a debilitating accident, we deal with situations where people are donating their organs because they're not going to survive from their injuries. We have these things in our hospital called a hero walk. That's when a patient is slated to go to the OR to donate their organs. I think a lot of hospitals do this, but I love that our hospital does it. Basically, they'll announce when the hero walk is. Any staff member available will just line up in the hallway, and the patient in their bed, being pushed by that nurse that's taking care of them, they basically roll their bed down the hallway to the OR, and any family members who are there, any friends who want to join, like, they all just walk in procession, like, down the hallway. And basically they're taking them to donate their organs. So that's the last time their body will be alive. Those can be hard. Those are definitely an emotional experience. I think the last time I really lost it at work was, there was a little child who was about my son's age. And you know, the patient's on the ventilator, they're unconscious, they're hooked up to all the machines, but they still have a pink little body, and, you know, they still have their blood circulating. And in this case, the mom was like on the bed with the child and the whole family was following. It was just, those kind of things make it very hard to, you can't detach yourself from that, because it's a real family. It's not just like, or this is a sad story you're hearing, but it, you know, it's a real person in your city that's really suffering. Along the same lines, like, when I was a nurse at the beginning, it was kind of like that. I kind of was like, I am the nurse, here's the patient. My job is to take care of you. And I saw them as people, but I kind of also just saw them as like, their label was patient. I would say in the last maybe 8 years of my career, it's really shifted. I don't know what it was that shifted. Maybe it's just growing older, where I really see them as like a fellow human that's suffering. And also just realizing that, like, I could be the one in the bed tomorrow. I could be the one in an accident, and I will be the one that needs care. And I need someone who cares and who is going to view me as a fellow human and not just, oh, it's just the patient. Like, let's just get this over with. I think that's really shaped how I take care of my patients these days, because we all are suffering in different ways. And on that particular day, like, that person needs a caring soul, and so does their family. They need someone that they can tell really cares. Honestly, I mean, I don't want to say that I can just completely detach myself. But it is interesting that there's a lot of things I can see that really don't faze me. And maybe it's just part of who I am. I have a lot of friends who say, oh, I can't look at blood. I can't look at this or that. And I can see things right in front of me that are horrific to look at or just really gross, like a lot of gross stuff. One time I walked into the emergency room trauma bay and some of the nurses were still in there. And I said, what's in that bag? And they pulled out just a human leg that had been severed from the body. I was just fascinated. It was like, wow. And I didn't see the patient because they were already at their CAT scan or something, but the person's leg had just been sucked off by some like farm machine or something. So I've always liked science. I've always liked learning about the human body. So some of those things are just very fascinating to me, but it's just interesting after all these years, like it just doesn't bother me.
We all have moments that we look back on in our work, some good, some not so good. You've defined a few of the not so good ones. How do the good days help you grow? And how do the bad days help you grow?
I guess first I'll start with like, how do I define a good moment? I think it's when I can tell, whether it's with the patient or with the family, I can tell that we've made some sort of deeper connection and that I've really made some sort of difference for them. That is like why I do what I do. You can take care of somebody and push buttons all day long on the machines and stuff like that. But it really, you know, to go a little bit further. And one of my friends said, every day that I work, I try to do at least one thing to make it a little better for the patient, like one thing above and beyond that I myself have done. And so I always try to remember that. So the sense that I've made a difference, when I know that I've really advocated for someone who can't advocate for themselves. Yesterday, actually, there was a patient and I was working in the recovery room. I occasionally go over there and she came out of surgery. And this was a developmentally handicapped patient who cannot speak. She's nonverbal. And I felt like I made a difference because there were several things that were going on with her that just seemed very off from her baseline, but it was hard to tell because she had no caregiver there and she had no ability to verbally communicate with me. And I had to talk to the doctor about it several times and they seemed very unconcerned. They just kind of were brushing off what I felt like was a bigger issue. And they were just planning to send her home, which I think could have been a problem. Either something bad at home could have happened or she would have come right back to the ER because she was having issues. After it was a little bit of a painful afternoon of like going back and forth on the phone and just monitoring this patient for a long time. But in the end, she was able to get admitted to the hospital overnight. And at the end of the day, as much as it was a challenging afternoon of communicating with people and a few things like that, I felt very good that I could advocate for her when she couldn't. I had several people say, I think it's very good that she stayed, like good job for really, you know, standing up for her. Had I just listened to the doctor, he would have said, she's fine, just let her go home. And I would have said, okay. But I really tried to stick to my gut and say, no, she's not doing well. Like you're not even here. You're not even coming to see her. And nurses are the ones at the bedside all day long. Doctors do a wonderful job, but they only see patients in little time intervals. And so we're the ones that really can let them know like what's actually happening with this patient. As far as growth goes, I've learned to not be afraid to trust my gut. And of course, the longer you do it, the more you get experience under your belt. So I think I have just learned to be able to say, no, this is what I'm seeing and you really need to pay attention to it. No matter how long you've been a nurse, you have to really, really pay attention to what you're doing. So whenever I'm giving a medication, for instance, like we scan it into the computer and there's a lot of checks and balances with that and with the pharmacy, but there's still room for error. And so I triple check everything and I really make sure that I'm giving the right thing to the right patient. And also in the ICU, there are times you're managing maybe like 8 to 10 IV infusions that are going at the same time. So you really have to be aware of what you're doing. It really reminds me to never let my guard down with how I'm taking care of my patient and how I'm paying attention to detail. Because op two, like if you miss certain details, bad things can happen with your patient and you have to be on top of what you're doing.
After a 12-hour shift of constantly being on your feet, I just think back on your comment just now, all of those IV fluids running at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's not just being aware of that for one person. It's about being aware of that for many people, right? A lot of things going into them and a lot of things coming out of them. And you're responsible for both ends,
all
so to speak.
Yeah. It's a good way to look at it.
What is your drive home like after a shift? How do you get back to baseline yourself?
I love to listen to music, but also sometimes I just drive home in complete silence and just totally zone out. Or sometimes I get in the car and I scream. That's not that common, but sometimes I just have to let it out for a second, like a lot of pent up frustration or just I'm exhausted. So yeah, I have about a 15 minute drive from most places that I go. So I just like to sit and stare out the window and get home. There's nothing really special I do, but it's nice to be able to not have much on the schedule once I'm home.
How different is the person you are at work from the person you are outside of work?
That's a good question. Well, I think being an ICU nurse has made me much more organized. I'm not the most organized at home. I still need to work on that at home. I was told one time when I first wanted to work in the ICU as a brand new grad, I was told that you can only work in the ICU if you're a type A personality. I'm very type B. At least I've always thought that about myself. And so I thought, well, I don't know if I ever can fit into the ICU. But I quickly learned there's many different personalities that work in the ICU, but you do have to, as I said before, be on top of everything you're doing. And so I think work has made me a lot more paying attention to detail. It has really shifted my perspective on just life itself, because like I talked about before, especially in the trauma unit, you see all kinds of accidents and these are just normal people. I think when things shifted for me, like I said, was when I came to the trauma unit, because before I had worked in the medical ICU primarily, which was a lot of like older, chronic, unhealthy people that don't take care of themselves. And then they end up getting really sick. You kind of have that kind of population in the trauma unit. It's just people that are often healthy. Now, sometimes they've made terrible decisions, poor decisions that have led to their accident or whatever. It just reminds you of like how fragile life is, how quickly things can change, how quickly you could be on the other side of be the one in the bed needing care and needing someone to wipe your own butt. So I think it's just helped me to appreciate just the beauty of life and that we never know which day will be our last. And so just live in light of that. For me, one thing I love about nursing is since it's such a human contact type job, it's really been a cool opportunity for ministry for me. I've had many opportunities to just sit and listen to people and try to help them process their fears, whether it's the patient or the family members. But I've had a lot of opportunity to pray with people and just try to reassure them with God's presence and then my presence as a nurse. And so that's been another joy I've had out of being a nurse is it's more than just a job. It can go beyond that.
When you think back on why you wanted to become a nurse, what was the primary catalyst? Was it just you were interested in science, as you talked about earlier? Was it an interest in serving people? Was it the paycheck? What was the drive to become a nurse?
I've thought about this recently before you've asked me this. And to be very honest, it was like never really a question for me. I think maybe when I was a kid, I thought, oh, I did actually want to be a veterinarian. And then I changed my mind. But I'd never had this huge, challenging decision about becoming a nurse. I think a few factors for me is that I have several nurses and doctors in my family. And so my grandma was a nurse. My other grandpa was an oncologist for years and years. So I had been around them. I do really enjoy science. I enjoyed studying anatomy and physiology. So I was always kind of good in those kind of subjects and math and everything. And my grandpa, who was a doctor, he took my brother and I on a couple of missions trips to the Dominican Republic, and we did medical work there. This was well before I was in nursing school. This was when I was in high school. I enjoyed just that whole process of like setting up the clinics. And I was the blood pressure taker at the time on those trips. And I just really enjoyed the human interaction. I do love talking to people. I think it was all of those factors combined. When it came time for college, I was just like, yep, I want to go to nursing school. And I had no other thing I was interested in. So it's just been a very natural thing for me. Also, personality wise, like I tend to be more of a caretaker. So I just really enjoy doing that and feeling like I've taken care of someone well at the end of the day. And like I said, hopefully making a difference in their day.
Who do you consider a hero in your line of work?
When I think of a hero, I think of someone very brave. I think all nurses are heroes, but I do really have a lot of respect for my peers who they stepped up when it was time to, with all the COVID stuff that happened. I had several peers that went out to New York City, some of the really hot spots with all the COVID stuff that was happening. I also took care of COVID patients, but these particular nurses worked 6-7 days in a row. They were away from their families. I really felt like they were, as they everyone said, like going to the front lines. Not that I was afraid of COVID necessarily, but it just sounded physically exhausting. Just it sounded like they had a lot of patients. Normally in the ICU, you have two patients. They might be on life support. So you really try to keep the patient ratios down. But I heard of much higher patient ratios. And I was just very impressed and in awe of these people who stepped up to do that. And they weren't afraid. They were, some of them were really excited to go do it. So I think that's pretty cool.
One consistency I've gotten from the people that we've talked to is the importance of your team. And you've talked about this a little bit. You've also talked about what happens when the team is either not present mentally as a team and how that can bring a lot of hardship into your day. Do you find in those circumstances that your responsibility increases if the team is not functional and you have patients to take care of? How does that change your mindset in the moment?
Oh, yes. Well, at the end of the day, the patient still needs what they need. And so you have to do what you can do. But I guess in my mind, when those kind of things, when I'm confronted in those kind of situations, I just have to be willing to ask for help or demand help if I need it, because I'm one person. I can only be in one place at one time. Like for instance, I had two patients the other day in the ICU. One of them was on the ventilator. We were still getting all their medications balanced so that he wouldn't wake up and go crazy and pull the tube out or get himself into trouble. And then at the same time, I got a new patient who came and he was also needing to be on the ventilator. He was very unstable. His blood pressure was super low. We needed to start all these medications on him, all these like IV drips and everything. And then he emergently had to go to a CAT scan to figure out what was going on with him. And then after the CAT scan, he emergently went to surgery. Those were both of my patients, and I couldn't be with both of them at the same time. So I had to grab a team member. The hard part about that day is that everyone else was extremely busy as well on our team. We had a team of 8 patients. So there were 4 nurses total, 8 patients total. We each have 2. Everyone else was extremely busy, but I had to grab another team member. And anytime you leave the unit with your patient, you have to have someone cover your other patient. So that's normal. I had to grab my other team member and say, "I'm so sorry, I have to leave. Please watch this other patient." And when I came back, she told me all the issues that he had, and it was almost impossible for her to take care of my patient and her 2 other patients. So it just became just too much for the amount that was there. And you have asked what's been hard about our job lately. I would say the staffing has been a challenge. For some reason, there's just never enough. That can be unsafe for patients. And it also, when you're that strapped, it just, you can't take quality care of your patients like you want to. I think most nurses I work with, we really want to take good care of our patients. We're not in it just for the paycheck. We're in it because we want to take good care of people. We want to make a difference and help. But when you're so busy, you can only do the bare minimum sometimes to get through the day, because you have to make sure that everyone is alive at the end of the day.
So you would define a hero as somebody who goes outside of the bounds of the normal expectations of your job. And I ask this question because from the outside in, somebody who's not a nurse, mm-hmm. who doesn't practice in that arena, I would say I've seen a nurse jump onto a stretcher and start to pump someone's chest to keep them alive.
Yeah.
So I've seen an ambulance show up, somebody come in, the EMT says this person is coding is the term, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. And the nurse literally straddles the person and is trying to keep them alive. That to me is heroic, but you would not define that as heroism. That's just part of the job.
I wouldn't say that's not heroic. Like, I think I did say that I do think every nurse is a hero. In particular, I think I was thinking of this specific group of people, but I do think that, yes, most nurses in a situation where there's someone outside of the hospital that is having a medical emergency, you will see nurses run to help that situation. And I think that's in the heart of almost every nurse. You can't help the fact that in this world, there's going to be accidents, there's going to be sickness and trauma and all these things. So it's not that we want to see those things happen, but when they inevitably happen, we want to be there to help. I love that about, you know, my peers is that they're willing to jump in even outside the norms of the job, like outside the hospital setting sometimes. And that can be scary because when you're in the hospital, when you're in the ICU setting, it's a very controlled setting. When you're outside of it, you know, you've got your two arms that you can do CPR with, but otherwise you don't have all the drugs. You don't have an IV in the patient where you can give medication they need. You can only do what you can do. But I think everyone is willing to do that.
What advice would you give to someone who's interested in becoming a nurse regarding mindset? What mindset should they have and what mindset should they cultivate?
Well, I think practically speaking, mindset aside for a minute, I think it's good to get into the hospital setting to see if that kind of pace and that kind of setting is something they can handle and something that works well for what they're looking for. I think sometimes it's easy to envision what it looks like, but to really be there, if, you know, go shadow somebody who you know, or go work as a patient tech and you really kind of see the ins and outs of the hospital and what goes on a daily basis, I think that would be great experience if you're wanting to get into nursing. Just really focusing on being a helper and being flexible, because nurses are, it just doesn't look the same every single day. You have to be really flexible in maybe the assignment you're given or the how critical someone is. And you have to be willing to, you know, get your hands dirty and work really hard. But definitely someone who cares about people and someone who is just wanting to help.
It's interesting. The people that I've talked to, and like I have a lot of friends who are cops, right? So
yeah.
I don't even know how to say this, but the things that they do that I find extraordinary are not to them.
Yeah.
They're very much like, no, that's a Tuesday. It's very much that way. I remember going on a ride along and my friend pointed at this backyard and he said, hey, isn't that a nice backyard? I'm like, yeah, it is. He's like, that homeowner 2 days ago woke up and looked out their back window and they have no idea that an entire SWAT team ran across that yard. That to me is a big deal. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, it was Tuesday.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you just get used to what you do and you don't necessarily think of it as that big of a deal. I think especially after years of doing it, you just kind of do your job, and we all have different things that we're good at. And so I'm really thankful to do what I do. And I'm out of jobs that I'm glad I'm not doing for sure.
What affects us either makes us stronger or weaker. Either we decide to proceed with this new terrible knowledge or we don't. What about your job would cause any normal person to want to not ever go back? If I were to summarize, based on everything you've said so far, you chose to go into a profession where you were able to serve people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You went through the schooling for it, which is not easy. It's very, very, very hard to become a nurse. You chose to go into the ICU. Mm-hmm. You manage patients who are specifically dealing with trauma, and you see these things transpire, and yet you go back to work, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That is not ordinary. Mm. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
A quick warning to our listeners. Parts of the next story are graphic. Listener discretion is advised.
I am an advanced EMT, and most people are unfamiliar with the hierarchy of pre-hospital care providers. The lowest level is an emergency medical responder, which is typically police officers, firemen, are trained to a very, very basic level of keep somebody alive for 5 minutes. The next level is EMT. The next level after that is advanced EMT, which allows you to do some invasive procedures like putting in IVs, some limited medications, things like that. And then the highest level is paramedic. So I'm somewhere between an EMT and a paramedic, closer to the EMT side, but can do some things that typical EMTs cannot.
What about your profession interested you enough to pursue it?
Well, my path has been very unusual. My initial profession was as an electrical engineer. I started working in my dad's engineering company when I was 14 years old. I graduated from Carnegie Mellon with a degree in electrical engineering, continued in the company, began to run the company when I was 35. And by the time I was in my mid to late 50s, I'd been doing this for over 40 years and was ready for that phase of my life to fade out. At the same time, I'd become interested in being more self-reliant, being able to deal with situations without relying on other people. And one of those aspects was in medical, especially emergency medical. So I took an EMT class at a local community college. I was 30 years older than the next oldest student in the class. And when I was finished, I quickly realized that I needed some practical experience in order to apply the things that I had learned from the book. So I joined a local fire company that runs ambulance calls, and I ran all the ambulance calls that I could. In a typical year, a regular member needs to have 120 points. You get a point by running a call and another point if you happen to attend the call and write the trip sheet. In that year, I had 774 points. So I would oftentimes jump off one ambulance and jump on the next and go on a call. And that's really when I began to learn my trade. And I realized that it was something that I actually enjoyed doing. After about a year and a half of volunteering, I asked if I could run some paid shifts as an EMT, and I was allowed. And then I went back to school to be certified as an advanced EMT, which I was a little over 4 years ago, and continue to this day as an advanced EMT working in the same company. It's a profession that is typically understaffed. There's always a need for people who are able and willing to do that kind of work. And so I'm working full-time to overtime, even though I'm rapidly approaching what should be retirement age. Still, I enjoy it. And as long as my health continues, I like to continue to do it.
How do you define a hard day?
That's an interesting question because I don't really find what we do to be hard. Though certainly, I know that there's people who would. For example, we deal with death all the time. Most of the death that we deal with is elderly people who have lived a full life, and it's their time. In other cases, it's people that have made, frankly, foolish life choices. So whether it's the drug dealer who's shot in the face and bleeding out in the middle of the street, or whether it's the alcoholic who is now, his skin and his eyes are yellow, his abdomen is bloated because his liver has been poisoned, or whether it's the 15-year-old who decides to hang himself with an extension cord in the basement of his home. All of these are tragic in their own way, but in the grand scheme of human tragedy, these are people who made choices. I'm sure there are many people who would find these situations hard. I don't particularly find them hard. Now, thankfully, I have never had to attend a child who has died in my care. That would be very hard. And there are EMS people, certainly, who have had that experience. I have not. There's another aspect of what we do that is distasteful. It's repulsive. It has to do with body fluids and smells and situations that are repulsive to many. I had a patient one time who I think he had some mental issues. He sat in an easy chair in his apartment. He would drink a can of beer and then he would urinate into the can and set it by his chair. If he had to defecate, he would just do it in his pants. Later on, when he walked down the hallway, the feces would fall onto the floor. When we walked in, there was probably 250 cans and cups of urine surrounding his chair. My partner, who was a young woman, was gagging. She couldn't even stand to be in there. Now, there are many people who would walk into a situation like that and say, never again. And it would be the end of their participation in a profession where you might have to encounter that. Thankfully, I had my respirator, so I didn't get the full effect of the circumstances. But again, it's the kind of thing that I'm able to deal with. Probably the hardest day for me is one in which I don't actually get to practice my skills. And that's a big part of EMS, people that use us, rightly or wrongly, as the hospital taxi. And so they call us, though in fact, they should not be calling us for such trivial things. They do. and we take them to the hospital. And sometimes you can have even days at a time where those kinds of non-stimulating calls are all that you get. And to me, that's probably the hardest, to get to the end of the day and all I can look back on is a paycheck. Nothing that was challenging or stimulating or allowed me to use my skills or really help someone. So I guess that's probably my best answer to your question.
When you think about, it seems like you have a sense of detachment sometimes with your work, between the work that you perform and the people that you are serving. Have you found that to be a requirement? And I ask because I have several friends who are police officers, and they have a similar, I don't want to say sense of detachment, but sort of. I'm here to either help this person or do a job most of the time. And then there's that 10% of the time where somebody is trapped in a vehicle underwater and the detachment is gone. It's very much I'm going to save this person or else. Do you experience that same effect? And if so, what is the 10% where you're like, okay, this is no longer just a job?
I would say that's absolutely true and essential to being able to continue in the job. If you take to heart every ounce of human suffering that you encounter, it will crush your soul. So there are occasions where it does get through. It reaches you. We had a call one time for childbirth. Well, that's a pretty common call. Typically, we pick up mom, we take her to the hospital, she gives birth there, no problem. We show up on this occasion, mom finally comes to the door and she says, I just gave birth to my baby who's 4 months premature, he's in the toilet. And I went in there and sure enough, he was in the toilet. I took him out, I wrapped him up in a beach towel that was in her bathroom. We clamped and cut the umbilical because everything was there. And we rushed him to the hospital to try to save this baby, which 4 months premature, starting life submerged in a toilet, the chances of him living are one in a million. But we did that, we took him, and that was probably for me the single most difficult call because he didn't make it. But even on that occasion, there was a magnificent part of it because when we arrived at the hospital with this little baby who was about the size of a softball, there was 25 or 30 people waiting for us. Every single person using every ounce of their skill. I don't think I can tell the rest of the story. To try to save that baby, and for one moment, Rick. There was no Republican or Democrat. There was no conservative or liberal. We were all of us pro-life, trying to accomplish what was practically impossible. And we didn't. But the fact that we tried was a wonderful, unifying experience. Along with that, I worked with a paramedic who was not too keen on the fact that I had come to the company as an older guy, kind of a poser, really. I didn't know what I was doing. And we had friction for a very long time. Well, he and I ran that call together. We were together in the back of that ambulance trying to save that baby. And it was a bonding experience that transformed our relationship. So even though it was very difficult, hard, as you said, even though the outcome was negative in the sense that the baby didn't make it, there was things about that that were wonderful, that were magnificent. So that's an example of times when you're no longer detached, times when you start to care. And I thought I was past that, but it was a while ago. I thought I was over that, but I guess I'm not. But I'm okay.
Appreciate you sharing that, Rick. When we've read back on heroes in history, all of those types of stories are present. And the ability to go through something like that and still show up to work the following day is one of the definitions of courage and heroism for all of those characters.
Well, as I say, it's very rare thankfully, it's very well, it is for me anyway. There's EMS people that function in different environments. Some of them see a lot more trauma than I see, that kind of thing. So it's very rare for me anyway, thankfully. I've run thousands and thousands of calls. That's one call. So it's not certainly not representative, or I wouldn't be able to continue if it was.
Yeah. When you think back on your day each day, what do you think of the highlights of your day besides being able to practice your skill set?
Well, the key to what we do, at least for me, without a doubt, is the people you work with. That makes the difference between whether every day and really every call is a good call or a bad call. There's no doubt that one of the keys to being successful is having a good partner. I've had bad partners. I've had partners who hated the job. They've been doing it for a very long time. To them, it was just a job. It was just a paycheck. To them, an ideal day would be to show up in the morning, spend the day sitting in an easy chair, never run a call, and go home at the end of the day. To me, that would be miserable. And when we went on calls, when we had to go on calls, they could make your life miserable with their complaining and their moaning and their terrible patient care. Thankfully, that is rare. The overwhelming majority of the people that I've worked with are good, capable, competent, caring people. And working with a good partner, there's no such thing as a bad call. No matter what call you're on, you enjoy working together as a team. And if it's a bad call, all the more so. You work together as a team. So I would say that's the other aspect of satisfaction in the job. It's one of the things I had to learn because I ran my own engineering firm basically by myself, which means I made all the decisions. I solved all the problems. So when I came to EMS, it was a significant learning curve to realize you're not by yourself anymore. You always have a partner. You always have people to back you up if you need help. You can always call the hospital and speak to the medical command doctor. You have support all around you. And initially, I would try to deal with things by myself. So it was a big difference to learn you're never alone. You're always working with other people. You always have help. And that's a huge part of being successful in EMS, is having good help. And typically, I do.
We all have moments that we look back on in our work, some good and some not so good. How do you define both, and how has that definition helped you grow in what you do?
When I encounter various calls, and you work your way through the call, and when it's done, you write a report, this is what we found, this is what we did, there's always a chance for evaluation. The call's done. There's nothing more you can do about it. You can't do any more or any less for the patient. But you can think back over what you did and ask yourself, is there any way that I could have done this better? That's true for both calls that have good outcomes and calls that have bad outcomes, calls that are complicated and critical, calls that are fairly routine. One of the things that appeals to me about EMS, even though as an engineer, I was always the golden boy. I understood things before other people did. Well, in EMS, I was always the slow kid in the class, and took me longer to process, to understand. But one aspect of EMS that does sort of fit is solving problems. You take pieces of information, incomplete pieces of information, and you try to figure out what's going on and what you can do to help. That's a challenge. And afterwards, you can think about that call and you could say, maybe I should have considered that this piece of information suggested something else. Maybe there's something else I could have done. And it's not a matter of failing to follow your protocols. It's just that initiative that you can take to try to understand, to try to solve, to try to put together incomplete pieces. And that evaluation goes on, for me at least, because again, I care. Some people don't, but I do. It goes on long after the call's over, and it doesn't matter whether it was a difficult call or a relatively simple call. I still ask myself, is there something else I could have done, something I could have checked, some issue that I could have considered that I did not?
If you wouldn't mind, Rick, just walking through what is your regular day?
As an advanced EMT, I typically have one of two roles. Either I'm paired with a paramedic, in which case the medic is the lead provider in the team, or in some cases, because we often are short paramedics, I end up performing in a low-level paramedic role. I'm the high provider on the team. Like this month, I'll be working a lot of 16-hour shifts. Normally, I didn't. I would normally work a lot of 8 hours. But this month, because we're short paramedics, I'm going to be running trucks. I'm going to be showing up at 7 o'clock in the morning or 6:30 or thereabouts to run my shift from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. The first thing I do when I arrive in the station is I check my truck. I want to make sure that every tool that I'm going to need is there and ready to use. That's, again, there are people that are lazy. They show up at a call. They find they don't have something that they need. Well, I hate it when that happens. Even if I'm the subordinate position, I hate showing up and finding out that the oxygen tank is almost empty. So when I show up, I go through the truck and make sure that everything is ready to use, everything that I could potentially need on any call. Second thing that I will do is I also happen to be the volunteer treasurer of our company. So there's duties that come with that. So I'll pay bills, or I'll record one thing or another, or I'll produce reports or something of that nature. That happens as well. And of course, during this time, if a call comes in, well, then you stop what you're doing and you go for your call. Throughout the day, you'll probably wash your truck, probably do a little work around the station, maybe mop the floors, take out the trash, that sort of thing. Apart from that, all you really do is wait for a call to come in. I know there are services where they put people to work with busy work. Well, we don't do that. If your truck is ready to go and you're ready to answer calls and you've done something around the station and all of your reports are finished, you can sit around and watch TV if you want. You can take a nap. Doesn't matter. Long as you're ready to go. So I'll just wait for a call to come in and I'll go on the call. And if I'm the one who's attending the call, when I come back, I'll write a report. I prefer to write it right away. Some people collect them and do them later. But if I do it right away, then the call is fresh in my mind. Sometimes we stack up call after call. And so I'll get two or three or four reports backed up. But I'll work through those. And beyond that, I'll just be ready to respond if a call comes in. We have a computer screen that shows us when calls are coming in. So typically we have some advance notice that something's happening. But from time to time, we'll have a cardiac arrest or something of that immediate nature. And then people come out of the woodwork you haven't seen since 1998 to go to something exciting. Someone's been shot, something like that. You rush for the trucks and you head to the call. But most things are pretty routine, and you and your partner go and you deal with it. When you come back, one of you is going to write a report, and that's how the day goes.
Once you get home from work, do you feel like you need to, I'll call it detox, as a result of being on shift? When you get home, how do you unwind?
I do that usually on the way home. I actually have a habit of talking to myself out loud when I'm in the car. I'm sure it would disturb people if they heard me, but I kind of review with the Lord what happened during the day. Sometimes the best I can say is, well, I collected a paycheck. Other times I can think through calls and give thanks for the fact that it was a challenging call, but I was able to put my training and experience to use. And there's a sense of self-satisfaction where you've worked hard to prepare yourself to do this well, and you did it well. And that's a lot of time when I'm also thinking, but I could have checked this or I could have done that to try to do just that much better. But that's during my ride home. It's about a 10-minute ride. And that's usually enough for me to debrief myself, so to speak, for the day. And then come home and get ready to go to bed and start over the next day.
Mm. How wiped are you after a 16-hour shift?
It's not as bad as it sounds, because again, you don't work 16 hours straight. In a 16-hour day, I will actually run, maybe 4, 5, 6 calls. I'll have hours where I have nothing to do but sit. I have a desk because I'm the treasurer. So I'll sit in my chair with my feet up on the desk and look at YouTube videos. So it's not, 16 hours is a long day and you are on duty and you're always ready to go, but it doesn't compare to what the nurses do. When a nurse runs a 16-hour shift, they work 16 hours. They are on their feet, going from room to room, doing one thing after another. They're paid much better than us, and they deserve it because they work nonstop for 16 hours. It is a long day, but it's not like I'm working the whole time. Now, there are other services where that's not the case. For example, there's other services where one of the things they do is non-emergency transports. They take people home from the hospital. We don't do that. But in the other services, if they're not on a call, they will send them to the hospital to pick up somebody and take them home. They actually do work their entire shift and write their reports. And so for them, their experience is different than mine. But mine, we're an emergency service. We have to be ready to respond to an emergency. But we don't have emergencies happening continuously during my 16-hour shift.
How do you define a hero in your line of work?
I would say there's a paramedic that works at our station who has been doing this for decades. He's actually slightly older than me, and this has been his career. I think he probably transported Moses in the back of his ambulance at one point in time because he's been doing it for so long. And the thing I admire about him is that after all these years, he still cares. He still likes to run EMS calls. He has no desire to push those calls off on somebody else. When it's his call, he takes his call. He treats the patient well. He is not only a competent, but highly experienced medic who never gets very excited. He never gets very up. He never gets very down. He has lived this life for, I'm going to say, four decades or more, and continues to do the job with excellence and with an excellent attitude. He, I think, is an example, a rare example of a hero in what we do, because he continues to answer the call day after day after day and has done so for decades and has never become jaded or burned out. He continues to respond and to care for people in need. And I admire for him. He's my favorite medic to work with. We work well together. He has his sphere of responsibility. I have mine. I know what he's going to want. I know what he's going to want to do. And I can assist him. I can support and supplement him. And I always like his attitude. So I would say that's an example of a hero in what we do.
What advice would you give to those interested in joining the EMS profession?
The advantage of an EMS profession is that you can put your toe in the water and you can go in just as far as you want. For example, our station has ride-alongs. So someone who's interested in a ride-along, they can schedule, they can come with us, they can ride in the ambulance on calls, they can see firsthand what a day is like. That's one opportunity. Secondly, you can go and train to be certified as an EMT. If you're an EMT, the fact is, at least in my state, EMT certification requires virtually no actual patient contact. It's so minimal. So what you've learned is some book knowledge. You don't have any practical knowledge. You don't have any experience to speak of, but you can learn and you can then, let's say, volunteer at a fire company like I did. And find out whether it's for you. You're going to know the first time when you walk in to that guy sitting in the easy chair with all those cans around the chair and piles in the hallway. You're going to know whether this is something that you can stand. You're going to know when you walk into that critical situation where someone's life is literally in your hands and in the hands of your crew, whether you can push your fears and concerns to the side and just focus on doing your job. Those kind of things will be evident to you, and you can decide to do more or to do less or to quit. And if you decide that you want to do more, well, then you can do what I did, or you can continue on to be a paramedic. So I would recommend that anyone who was interested at least go on a ride along, if it's possible, with services in your area, find out firsthand what it's like. I also think it's a very good thing to be certified as an EMT. It's about 3 months of classes and some tests, And if you're able to do that, at the very least, you will have knowledge that could save someone in your family's life, or some friend, or in your church family, or something of that nature. You don't have to do any more if that's all you want to do. And if you find it is something that interests you, like it interested me, then you can continue. You can do more and learn more and go about as far as you want to go, even if you want to go up to being a paramedic.
Rick, we greatly appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Look for the helpers. Fred Rogers said this, and despite current commentators decrying it as childish, Mr. Rogers was correct. When you see the helpers, be inspired by them. Take note of what they do and why they do it. Look at their actions, understand what drives them, and then use their example as inspiration.
When you know history, you have context, and with context comes perspective. By studying the heroes in history, you learn about how such people saw light in the darkness, forged paths of freedom, and committed acts that inspired millions of people across the centuries. With this perspective, we hope you can see our world as a place where heroes still exist, and with the right perspective, you can become one.
Thank you for joining us on Season 6 of 15 Minute History. Please take a moment and leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. Please also be sure to share this podcast with your family and friends. The more you do, the more we grow. Season 7 will begin in October. We can't wait to welcome you back.